Hello and welcome back to the show. Today we're joined by Dr. Amy Apigian to talk about trauma and how it affects health, particularly gut health, and what you can do to overcome it.
Many of you that watch our episodes each week are actually not subscribed, so it would be great if you could click that subscribe button below, and that'll help us get the message out to more people that need to hear it the most. All right, let's dive right into the episode.
Dr. Amy, it's wonderful to be with you today to talk all about trauma and how it affects health, particularly gut health. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here and talk about one of my favorite subjects.
Awesome. I am so glad we're here to talk about this really important topic because I feel like it so often gets looked over. And in our experience of interviewing doctors time after time, they've said to us, you know, if you have a patient that seems to not be making progress and you've turned all the possible stones, do not ignore trauma, do not ignore emotional health, because it really can make the difference in someone's health. And so tell me, Dr. Amy, how is it that you discovered this topic or why it's so important to you?
I actually am still kind of surprised that I landed here myself. This was not the vision that I had for myself. I didn't go to medical school thinking that, oh, like I want to go into emotional trauma. And my story really started when I adopted a 4-year-old foster boy from the foster care in California. And I'm going to obviously say that I was young then, because compared to now, I was definitely younger. But just my mindset back then was that, you know what? I'm in medical school. I come from a good family. I know everything. I can fix this kid. And he obviously had a lot of trauma in his life. In fact, by the time he came into my home, he had already had about 20 placements as a 4-year-old. Oh, wow. Which is quite normal in the foster care system, just because they get placed in a place where they're waiting for the next home to open. But that's a temporary placement, and so they never really feel like they settle there before they then move on to another home and then a group home. And so there's a lot of moving around for him. And so in addition to all of the other reasons of why he was even in the foster care system, right? Then he had had that trauma of never really having had a stable home. I knew that all he needed was love and stability and he would be fine. In fact, that's what the social workers told me. And so it validated all I needed to really do for him was just love him and provide him that stability that he had never had, and he was going to be fine. And that is not what happened. In fact, the longer he was with me, the worse his behaviors were getting. And we're talking about emotional, behavioral issues. It got very severe. I don't want to scare your audience, but it got to the point where I felt like I was running a child psych unit. That's how scary it was and how severe it was. And being trained in the conventional medicine, my initial instincts were, okay, well, I take him to a psychiatrist. I take him to a therapist, right? Because that's what you do when people have emotional problems. And I got nowhere with that. What the psychiatrist wanted to do was to start him on mood medications that would make him gain weight, that would sedate him, and that would just kind of tone everything down. And I'm like, I get it, and I appreciate you wanting to help me, but that's not the core issue. Like, that's not what is going to be addressing why this is happening. And then I took him to therapy, and we did regular therapy, we did play therapy, and those things actually made him worse. He would come out after those sessions, and it was just like things had been opened up that he had no idea how to control. He had no idea what he was feeling. He just had all these very vague memories, and he would take it out on me. And it was like, okay, that's got to stop. So here I was with all of my resources that I knew at the time, not able to help me. And so that's when I decided, okay, like, I'm not going to give up on this kid. I'm going to figure this out, and I'm going to throw myself into now understanding what is going on in his brain? But more importantly, like, how do I fix it? And the third question for me, which was just as important, was how do I fix it as soon as possible so that he can have as long of a good, happy childhood as possible? So that's what I threw myself into. And so now, taking like my background of medicine, and I also had a master's in biochemistry, I now just dived into reading literature, reading books, looking for places, resources, anything that was actually working and helping these kids. And I started to find things. I started to put pieces together, but it was still 6 long years of me putting pieces together before we found all of the pieces that he needed to make that shift. And when that shift happened, it was so dramatic and, of course, so meaningful for both of us, because he didn't like feeling this way. He didn't like living this way. And by the time that final piece was put into place, it actually happened just over a week, where like everything that we had done up until then, all of that foundation work that I had been putting in with all the other places, and then that final therapy approach that we did, literally in the course of 1 week, he dramatically changed, and he all of a sudden was loving. He was very considerate. He wanted just to help me. He wanted to do, you know, the work and the chores, and he wanted to snuggle. And up until then, it was very much like, I want you, I need you, but at the same time, like, I'm scared of trusting you. I'm scared of relying on you, because that's never worked out for me in the past to rely on people. And so it was always this constant pull and push, and all of that fell away within a week. And I remember that change just in how he held my hand. And before, it was this very weak thing where I felt like I was having to hold his hand. And now it's like his hand was there and it was engaged and it was holding on to mine. And he would look into my eyes and he was finally able to say, like, "Mommy, I love you." Aww. And so to see that dramatic change happen, it was like, okay, I have found something, and I want to share this with other people, because there's a lot of other kids out there struggling. So I started that work, and all that was fine and good, but I was still of this mindset that, you know what, like, I'm in conventional medicine, and I had started a general surgery residency, and I was the best at being able to ignore my emotions, distract myself from emotions, and of course, like, not even realizing that I was doing this, because this has just always been my life, right? Like, I was just so focused on performance and being busy and got a lot to do. And so when I finally had my health crisis, we'll call it that, where my health fell apart and I literally could not get out of bed, I could not stay awake long enough to return a phone call to the hospital. Wow. I was like, all right, like, we can't ignore this anymore. We got to figure out. So I did the same thing that I had done with my son. I started with the conventional medicine that I knew, that what I was trained in that. And so we went and we ran all the blood work. Everything, for the most part, was normal. And I'm like, okay, but I'm not normal. Like, what I'm experiencing is not normal. So I don't care what your labs say, something is wrong. And so then that started me on my own path to figuring out answers for my health. And that's when I came to realize, based on some different labs that I went and got, that, wait a second, like, I have all of these health patterns that I've learned are associated with childhood stress and trauma. Why would I have those? Like, I wasn't abused as a kid. I wasn't a foster kid. Why would I have these same health problems and patterns that show up in people in adulthood when they had a stressful childhood? And so that's where I came to learn, because then I threw myself into figuring out, okay, like, if I did this for my son, how do I do this as an adult? How do I rewire? Hopefully it's not too late. How do I rewire my nervous system for health, physical health, and now mental and emotional health as an adult? And like you said, Sarah, it's not only overlooked by many providers, but it's so misunderstood, because people think that I had to have been abused or neglected, or something really bad had to have happened when I was a kid for me to have attachment trauma or these imbalances in my nervous system. And so that can't be it, because that was not my childhood. There may have been stress, but it wasn't trauma. And so just this concept of trauma is so misunderstood. And so many people then are struggling with health consequences from these issues because they don't relate to having had trauma. So that's my long story of how I got into this space. And again, like I'm still surprised that I'm here because this is not how I started out. And it took my son and then it took my own health crisis to realize that, wait a second, like this is really the basis for health right here.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that story. It's a really powerful story. And it's so cool that you're now leading a thriving community of people that, you know, to help overcome this. I'm just super curious, as you were diving into the literature, take us into that part of your story. What were some of the strange connections that you found between trauma and the human body and how maybe some diseases are made worse or conditions are made worse because of specific traumas?
Absolutely. And there's quite a lot of information on this. But again, most people don't relate to that because they get stuck on that word trauma. But what we know, and this is especially coming from the studies from the adverse childhood experiences, when a child experiences high stress and they even have the questionnaire that a person can fill out and find their ACE score, I personally do not find that helpful, but we can save that for another conversation or later if that would be helpful. But what then happens is this imbalance starts to build because it affects their nervous system. And they are still developing their nervous system at that age. And so then their whole rest of their biology grows up with this imbalance that it's having to kind of compensate for. And that compensation then creates imbalances in other systems later on with life. And especially then if you have other stressful events, stressful life events, that can often be a trigger for the development of these new systems because your system has already been trying to compensate for so long and it just got hit with one more thing and now it can no longer compensate. So some of the imbalances that we see a lot are the digestive system. Oh my goodness, so much in the digestive system. I mean, you guys know this, right? Like you know that the digestive system is more made up of nerves than actual other tissues. And so the nerves, like, You can't separate, well, these nerves weren't affected by stress and trauma. Like the nerves are the nerves are the nerves. And so when there is that imbalance in the nervous system, it's going to show up a lot in the digestive system because of how much it is controlled by the nerves, the enteric nervous system. So a lot of digestive issues, and those would include everything from acid reflux to, you know, like a stomach ulcer, even your pancreas being able to secrete insulin and the digestive enzymes to actually properly digest the food that you're eating. And then there's the whole absorption and all of the gut lining, and that's really dramatically affected by any imbalance in the nervous system, especially the motility of the colon. And so this is where people can experience IBS symptoms because they're going back and forth between the two different survival states, the sympathetic state and then the freeze state. And those are very different messages to our digestive system. And so they can be predominantly the diarrhea, predominantly constipation, or go back and forth between the two, depending on, again, how these imbalances are showing up specifically in their body. So one would be the digestive system and literally like everything in the digestive system. And then the hormones, right? So hormones are very much connected to the nervous system. You can even think of it in terms of the stress hormones, right? So that makes sense where we know that initially we have adrenaline that's released with a startle, with a very temporary fear situation. But then with chronic stress, that is more of the cortisol. And so depending on where a person is at, they can either have really high cortisol or they're flatlining. And so now they're struggling with really low energy and maybe even depression because their cortisol is at a very low level. But if we are affecting the cortisol and the hormones, all of the sex hormones are going to be affected. So even the estrogen and the testosterone and your blood pressure. So all of those are hormones and that whole system can be affected when we have these imbalances in our nervous system because it partly contributes and controls that system as well. So literally everything in the body is either affected by or run by the nervous system. And so the imbalances will cause these kinds of problems, anything from hormone problems, digestive systems, autoimmune problems. So the immune system is a big one. Autoimmune issues are a big one for people who have had childhood stress. And then cardiovascular problems. And so this is where we, again, come to realize that the nervous system is what controls our breathing, controls our lungs, and makes our heart beat and pump blood. And so if there's any imbalances, it will also show up there in terms of high blood pressure or even low blood pressure, asthma. And of course, with asthma, you bring in the immune component as well. So, I mean, it literally just sets the tone for everything, having problems and being imbalanced, and whatever are the other unique aspects of a person's life and their health and their genetics, that's kind of what determines what symptoms they will develop as kind of a long-term compensation from chronic stress and their childhood stress.
Wow. This is so much we can dive into with that.
Right.
And thank you for sharing. One thing that we've seen in our community, people that, for example, have IBS, and yes, there's this strange connection between IBS and anxiety. Can yes, you explain as to how that can happen? And often what we've seen from our doctors as well in the series, that someone that, unless they deal with this trauma or this this event, that the IBS mm-hmm, persists. So this is right, like obviously this really curious gut-brain axis mm-hmm, thing going on. Can you explain the mechanics of as to what is going on there and why mm-hmm, if you don't deal with the trauma, you may continue to have some form of yes, digestive disruption?
Yes. So I will give you the very short answer, but give you a good answer in terms of what the mechanics are that you're asking about. But again, like even just that question could be a whole topic in and of itself. So what we understand of the body now, when a person experiences a stress, their body, their nervous system goes into the sympathetic state. That is the first survival state that the nervous system goes into, always, every time. And so ideally where we want to be is what is called the parasympathetic state, which is where it's also called like the social engagement state, rest and digest. There's different names for it, but it's this concept of it's where our nervous system is healthy, it's balanced, everything is running well. Our survival instincts are in the background because there's no active or perceived threat in our environment. As soon as there is that potential threat that arrives in our life, whether it's an email, whether it's a phone call, whether it's whatever it is, right? It really doesn't matter. Then our nervous system always responds by going into a hyper alert, hyper vigilant state in order to protect ourselves. That sympathetic state is a very energetically active state. And so there's a lot of energy that's being used up in order to protect ourselves. And part of that then are all of the hormones that get released, specifically like the adrenaline, and then that can shift and start to produce the cortisol. There is a normal cycle that we call the survival cycle that needs to complete in order for our bodies to be able to come back to that parasympathetic rest and digest state and truly feel and know that, the threat is over. And as a society, we don't do that. We have no idea that there even is a cycle, let alone how to complete that cycle. And it can be uncomfortable, and we've never been shown how to do it. And so what ends up happening is that most of us experience a startle, and we chronically live in this hyper alert state, always thinking that there's danger right around the corner. Even if we can't see it, we feel it. Like they're just waiting for that next bad thing to happen, rather than actually being able to truly come to a secure place, knowing that they are okay. And when I use that word no, I realize that most people probably don't know what I'm talking about. I really refer to like this gut feeling that everything is okay. It's not just an intellectual knowing. That doesn't really help our nervous system. It's the gut feeling that we have. And so when we sit with our bodies, which again is not something that our society really does anymore, when we actually just sit and let our body feel and let, you know, see what our body is actually feeling, what do we feel in those moments? Do we feel the stress and the anxiety? Well, that's how we know, ooh, like I'm probably living chronically in this sympathetic, hyper alert, always looking for danger, and I'm going to have chronic IBS symptoms. Or when you are able to sit, do you feel like, no, like I am safe. I am good. Everything is okay. I am okay. The world is okay. And actually have that gut feeling. And when it is that gut feeling of security, that's when the IBS symptoms will resolve. But how do we actually complete that survival cycle to get there? That is where the key is. And if we don't complete that cycle, that's when these symptoms of trauma will persist because we've actually never completed the trauma and survival cycle.
Great. Thank you. When you were sharing just now, I remembered quite a few, well, two of my friends, actually, they've told us about how when they did yoga, the first mm-hmm. times they did yoga, and I guess that would be a time where they're like sitting with their body or connecting with their body. Yeah. Both of them were just like in tears as they were stretching and moving, which sounds really odd, but when you put that sort of language around it, right. It makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. It's just what your body is truly, how you were truly feeling mm-hmm. at that subconscious mm-hmm. state. Mm-hmm. So interesting. Mm-hmm. But I want to go back to the ACE test or adverse childhood. What's the other word? Experience?
Adverse childhood experiences. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. The question, did I hear you correctly before you said that you don't necessarily like that a score is given? What's the issue with that test?
The issue that I have with that test is that it misses all the rest of us who had inadequate support in our childhood. And so that resulted in this imbalance in our nervous system. But it's not going to reflect on that test because we didn't have parents that went to jail. Right. We didn't have parents maybe that were alcoholics or drug users. And so we can have a relatively low score and yet have all of these symptoms. And it's really discouraging when that happens, because it's just a disconnect between what a person experiences in their body and what they're being told is or is not the reason. And so that's my issue with it, is it misses all the rest of us who had relatively good childhoods, but still have this attachment trauma. And I call it a trauma just because of the chronic effect that it has had on our nervous system. And that's the definition of a trauma.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I'm sure a lot of people that are listening right now will be relieved to hear you say that, because, you know, that's right. A lot of us who had great childhoods still are processing things. And I guess it would be a validation to hear.
Yes,
to hear
exactly.
That. So thank mm-hmm. you.
And we don't need to say that the parents were bad, right? Like, we get to leave all judgment aside and just say, look, the symptoms that you're having show a level of imbalance in your nervous system that would have gone back to childhood for whatever reason, right? And that can be partly because of genetics. It can be a number of environmental factors. Like, we don't need to even understand all the factors that contributed to that, but it would have been a feeling that you did not get enough of the support that you needed at that time. That's really all it says. It doesn't mean that they didn't give you any support. It doesn't mean that they didn't give you a lot of support, but it may not have been in the way that you needed at that time based on what was going on in your body. Maybe, you know, a baby had colic. They need a lot more support, right? So there's so many factors that can go into how much support a child needs and in what way to develop a secure attachment style and have the security and balance in their nervous system. So
Thank you.
I'm just curious, while we're just on this topic, does it always have to be a childhood trauma? Is there any examples of people you've worked with that have had a later trauma and then experienced you know, whatever XYZ body, you know, symptoms?
That's a really good question. And this will be my answer. When a person is not able to recover from a later trauma, it's usually because they have prior imbalances in their nervous system that prevent them from completing the cycle that is normal and natural. And so it is normal for us. It is a natural thing that our bodies are built to do, to bounce back and recover after stress and traumas. We've been doing this, you know, ever since humankind started, right? Like there have been disasters, there have been catastrophes, there have been all kinds of stuff. And we have, that's part of our nervous system, is being able to process these and get back to a place of health. So when we find a person getting stuck in that process, that has been because they have these prior imbalances in their nervous system that prevent that natural, healthy process from happening.
Excellent. Is there a specific diet, like is there, I guess, specific, I would say, functions that are happening when this loop isn't closing? Like, is there usually some problem areas that, you know, that you just dive into specifically in someone's body or in their, you know, is there a common symptom that you're seeing that you're like, haha, this loop isn't closing properly. They're not dealing with stress very well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And part of the exciting work with the nervous system is that you can really become an expert at reading not only your own nervous system, but then other people's nervous system, because it's so predictable. Once you get to know how the nervous system works, it really is very easy to understand, easy and predictable. And so, yes, there are patterns that show up, and some of these patterns would be, how quickly do you go into sympathetic? And one thing that we haven't talked about yet is, how quickly do you go from stress to overwhelm? That right there is one of the most specific features that I've seen that characterize early childhood stress from a later trauma or stress that we're dealing with. When a child is developing, their nervous system has not yet fully developed, right? Like we talked about that, we mentioned that. And so what happens is that one of their primary mechanisms to cope through something difficult is just to kind of go numb and not feel it, right? Not really care. And that helps them get through. But that process is actually going into the second survival state, which is the freeze state. And so no, that does not mean that they are frozen in place, that they can't talk, they can't walk. It means that they feel that they're just kind of emotionally flat, a little emotionally numb. This is the same effect that many medications will give people that become addictive medications, like the opiates, like the benzodiazepines, like alcohol. It produces the same numbing effect that just tones the intensity of the emotions down. And that's what then helps them cope. But that is the freeze response. And so when I see that, that is most often a result of that imbalance starting that way in childhood. Because with a child's nervous system not being fully developed, they go to that place faster than an adult who has a completely formed nervous system.
So interesting. All right. So for all our viewers that are at home and for us, obviously, who are listening, they're like, interesting. That sounds like me. That sounds like me. Okay. So I have trauma. What do I do about it? So Dr. Amy, how do we rewire our brains, our nervous system to actually process this and deal with this stress in a healthy way?
This is such an important question, and anyone can benefit from this. So even if they don't relate to having a trauma in their life, but just having stress or burnout, like this is stuff that they will benefit from. And it takes an integrated approach where we're working with the body, we're working with the mindset, we're working with the thoughts that come up, but we cannot forget the biology. And knowing that the nervous system is a biological system, it's not fair to put all of that on psychology and therapists to try to fix the biology. And so we really need to address the biology and the health of the nervous system. And what can we do to optimize the nervous system and specifically optimize its neuroplastic ability? And this is that awesome ability to be able to change itself, to be able to rewire itself so that people like me, even as an adult, can say, hey, I want to change and be able to change. And so there are things that we can do that enhance, that optimize the nervous system's ability to change and that neuroplastic ability. And so we have to be addressing the biology of a person, specifically, especially like their mitochondria, right? Nerves require a lot of energy. And so if your mitochondria are having any compromise in their ability to make energy efficiently, that's going to affect the nervous system. And even the gut health, right? The gut health, there can be a lot of inflammation from the diet that we're eating. Even if it's a healthy diet, it may not be the right one for us. We may be eating foods that are causing immune reactions. All of that inflammation is going to affect our nervous system. And what it does is it gives the brain the message that, hey, we have an internal threat. So it's the same thing as if we were seeing someone walking down the street, you know, with something that looks like they were going to rob us, right? Like that's an external threat. And our nervous system picks that up and tells our brain, hey, there's a threat coming. But we can have these biological imbalances in our immune system, in our mitochondria, our energy production that give the same message of, hey, we've got a threat to our survival here. And as long as we have any kind of that message internally or externally, our nervous system is going to be stuck in survival mode because that's what it does. Like it knows how to help us survive. And so we really have to be able to biologically create an environment for our nervous system internally that supports its feelings of safety, security, health, balance, and the neuroplastic effect. So there's the biology aspect. And then there is, yeah, like the emotions and the mood and the triggers and all of that. And how do we address that? And that was part of my quest for my son and for myself was what therapies are not only effective, right? But my third question was, and how do we fix this as soon as possible? And so which ones are the ones that will give me the fastest results that will last, that are true lasting results? But I don't want to spend years in therapy. I want to get this, you know, over with. I really didn't want to deal with it in the first place. But if I have to, let's, you know, just get over it.
Rip off the Band-Aid.
Exactly. And so, yes, like I've done that research and I've gone and trained in different trauma therapies that I have found to be the most effective and efficient at shifting the nervous system to the parasympathetic state, to that social engagement where a person feels grounded, present, safe, secure, healthy. And so those would be many more of the body-based trauma therapies that work directly with your nervous system. So that would include, but is not limited to, somatic experiencing. And then all the advanced trainings with that, even like the neuroaffective touch. And then there is another art narrative therapy that really works with this whole survival cycle and the cycles that your body would have gone through. But you're looking for a therapy that is aligned with the actual biological process of survival and these three different nervous system states. If the therapist is not working with the nervous system in one way or the other, it's not going to be lasting change. Many people, and again, this was me, right? So no judgment. I would go to a therapist and talk it out and feel better after my session. But then 2 days later, something else would happen and I'd be stressed until I could go in to see the therapist again. And the nervous system will always override our logical brain every single time when there's a threat. And so if we're going to change the nervous system, we have to work directly with the nervous system. And that can't be done through the logical brain because we're working with a very subconscious, pre-verbal, non-verbal experience of our nervous system. So that would be my recommendation to people, is find a program that is aligned with and works with the nervous system. And then don't forget the biology piece. Don't forget those things that are super important: your diet, exercise, movement, water. Like, there are specific things that you can do to enhance the neuroplastic ability of your nervous system. And when you're doing both of those at the same time, you can get results very fast, especially compared to how long you may have lived with these patterns. When you're doing the biology piece, helping the nervous system be able to change, and then actually doing the work to change it, like, that's just, yeah, that's the perfect key right there.
Wow. Thank awesome. You. I love this concept. Like, with everything you're saying, I think it's so powerful and so needed. I'm curious if you've had any specific case studies with people that you've worked with that you'd be willing to share.
Or your son, if you feel comfortable with that.
Anything that also could be related to perhaps they were experiencing some form of gut issue that was so persistent, and then suddenly, you know, they've done this work and then it's cleared up.
That would be- us through that therapy. Yeah. That would be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I will give you a story of what a patient I will call Katie. And she had been seeing even a functional medicine doctor for some time because she has symptoms of IBS for about the last 10 years. And it was to the point where she was continuing to lose weight. And so, and she was already thin, but she would go through these periods of life where, because of different circumstances, then she would experience such anxiety that the IBS symptoms would get worse and her ability to absorb nutrients would go down, and she would struggle with her weight. She had been to see many doctors, of course, had started with the conventional medicine approach, but it had eventually gone to a functional medicine doctor and been working with this doctor for the last 2 years. And they had been able to make a lot of good progress. But there came the point where she was doing everything that she was supposed to be doing and still was at a place where she had plateaued in her symptoms and it wasn't shifting. It wasn't getting better. And there was nothing left to change in her diet. There was nothing left to change. Like, she was stuck. And so the provider referred her to me and said, hey, I think that she needs to deal with the trauma piece. And so we started doing this exact work where a lot of the biology piece was being done, but we were able to also include some pieces of the mitochondria and energy, because being in chronic sympathetic state, like, her mitochondria were wiped out too. And then started working directly with her nervous system. And for her, I mostly did a combination of somatic experiencing and then parts work. And that combination I have found extremely useful for myself and for the groups of people that I lead through my coaching program. And so we started working.
What do you mean by somatic experiencing?
Yes. Somatic experiencing is a specific trauma therapy approach developed by Dr. Peter Levine. And it's this concept and this approach of working directly with the nervous system rather than being a talk therapy. And so what we do is we usually have a person start thinking of something. Sometimes they walk into the office anxious or, you know, worried, and we don't have to have them think of anything. Like, it's already right there. But then, rather than talking about it, we actually just say, okay, like, how is this anxiety actually showing up in your body? And for some people, a lot of people, it's stuff in their stomach, right? I feel like I've got a knife in my stomach. I feel I have a knot in my stomach. I feel I have a bowling ball in my stomach that's just sitting there and it's heavy. Like, so much of the symptoms actually show up in our gut. So it's no surprise then that they have gut symptoms. That's so much of where our nervous system communicates with us. But for many people, it's also stuff that shows up in their chest. So they may feel like there's just this tension in their chest, or they feel like there's little space. They may feel, if we're talking about grief, they actually may feel like there's cement in my heart. Like, it just feels like it's being pulled down and held down. So there's all these different ways in which the nervous system experiences an emotion. And in order for us to work with the nervous system so that it can complete the survival cycle, we go right there. So we get out of the logical brain and actually talking about it, and we just start noticing and allowing the emotions to come up in our body. And then we work with that once we've been able to identify that. It's so funny because when I first start working with someone, I'll be like, so, you know, like, what are you noticing in your body right now? And they're like, nothing. I'm like, no, you do have a body, right? Like, but just as a society, we are so brain, we are so thought focused that we don't know what's happening in our body. I was the same way, right? Like, I went into training as a surgeon. I was all brain. So it took a lot for me to learn, like, oh no, like, so much of the nervous system happens in the body. And when I can actually become an expert at those symptoms that show up as part of my nervous system, then I can work with it. And then my life is actually much better than having to try to numb it, distract it, ignore it, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm.
So once someone connects to their body and they're like, oh, yep. I, for example, they're like, I feel the bowling ball in my tummy. Yep. How do you help someone process that feeling? Or what is the purpose of the somatic experience? Mm-hmm. Is it first just connecting, or is it then processing, or?
Yeah. And there's no easy answer because it depends on each person and where they're at. For some people, just connecting with their body is overwhelming. And so that's actually too much. And we can't and should not start there. Right. Because as I just kind of briefly mentioned before, anytime we cross that line of overwhelm, our nervous system goes into the freeze response. Mm-hmm. It's not helpful. We're trying to pull people out of the survival responses. And so we need to stay out of that overwhelm. So it really depends on that person and where their baseline is to know what would be overwhelming for them and how slow do we need to take things. But in general, where I usually start people is noticing and giving a number for the intensity of the unpleasant feeling, we will call it. And so maybe they start at an 8. Yeah, this ball in my stomach, it feels like an 8. And so then I say, all right, we're going to try to bring that down to a 7. We're not going to try to bring it down to a 0. We're going to try to bring it down to a 7. And then I walk them through different exercises, different movements, different things to try. And we try them. Sometimes we look stupid and we laugh at each other, you know, but it's this willingness to experiment and see what makes it better and what might make it worse. And really being able to then know, like, oh, like, I can have actually a lot of control over my nervous system by the different things that I do. And so then we usually find something that helps. And what most people find is that they're actually able to bring it down to a 5, a 4, a 3 in a matter of 30 seconds once they know what to do. But they didn't realize that that was possible. Like, they just thought, like, this is an 8. I don't like it. So let me ignore it. Let me numb it. Let me try to distract myself rather than using the skills that they have available to them now through this work of, you can actually bring this down relatively quickly so that it is not as uncomfortable, and then we can work with it better. It's when it is so intense and uncomfortable that it can quickly become overwhelming for people trying to work with these symptoms.
Awesome. I'd love to finish the story. I think we might have cut you off from finishing the story.
Yes. So Katie and I started working, and our very first session, I asked her very much the same questions, right? Like, what's going on? What do you notice in your body? She had a hard time noticing any of that because she was so much in her racing thoughts, right? Like, well, my daughter did this, and then this happened, and then they called, and then my mother, oh my goodness, my mother, right? And it's like, ooh, bring it all back. Bring it all back. We're going to get out of the thoughts. We're going to get out of the story. The story doesn't matter. What's going on in your body? And what happened was that right underneath all of that anxiety was a lot of sadness and a lot of fear and a lot of grief. And so that's where we started. And what ended up happening is that she would cry a little bit and we'd process that. And it usually comes in waves. That's how the nervous system works. There's a rhythm to it and it comes in waves. And so we would let a wave, you know, pass through, and then she'd breathe that deep spontaneous breath. That's like, ah, that's the relief. She's back in the parasympathetic. And then her body would bring something else back up and she would be like, well, now I'm having a headache. Okay, let's work with that. And sometimes part of this work is, why would there be a headache right now, right? Like, we were just talking about the chest tightness. Why would there be a headache that would show up now? Oh, now my ankle is hurting. Really? How interesting. Like, why would the ankle be hurting now? Like, it allows us to be so curious and learn so much about our body when we're able to have the tools to do that. And so she started doing the work and she found so much relief and peace, and all of her symptoms started to then shift. And so she's able to go back to her functional medicine doctor and they're able to make progress again now because she's not holding all of this emotion still in her body and still being trapped. And so being able to process that now. And the beautiful thing is that it's now she has the skills to do that on her own. It's not like she has to hold it in and then go to a therapist. Like, these skills are something that you can learn and become a master expert of your own nervous system and know how to process things as they come up so that all in the same day you can experience something and let it pass and process it rather than letting it get stuck and making the rest of your body compensate for then this extra burden of stress that you're having to carry around. So yeah, Katie was just the shift in her life, and she had just lived with this for so long. And in 2 months of just meeting weekly, we were able to experience this shift for her. That's how fast the nervous system can shift when we put these pieces together.
So cool. Thanks for sharing.
It is. It's really cool.
For our viewers at home that are just like, okay, I have the, yeah, have this, I'm starting to be aware of my body and mm-hmm. I'm feeling mm-hmm. things in my body. We're not just these floating heads. Mm-hmm. We're aware of the body. Can you talk me through, you said, being empowered to help these feelings pass. And you said in your sessions, you might do exercises or, you know, why might that be happening? What else do you help? How else do you help people process these feelings and get them out?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the ways in which I do that is through the parts work. And a very simple explanation for parts work is being able to identify an emotion and just saying, there is a part of me that will feel sad. There is a part of me that will get angry. There's a part of me that feels really scared. And so then we can start to kind of develop these different players and see them as different parts rather than this is all me and I don't understand myself and I don't understand why I do what I do. And so being able to identify them as, hey, there's this part of you, right? And even that came up with Katie. So we started doing the parts work and she was like, you know what? This feeling in my stomach is my 10-year-old self. I'm like, okay, tell me more. And she's like, when I was 10, my mom would leave me for hours. And all day long, I was the only one. They were living in a trailer home at the time at a new place. She didn't know anybody. She didn't know the community. She didn't have any friends. And so here she was left all alone as a 10-year-old. And she was able through this work to identify like that feeling in my stomach when it shows up, it's my 10-year-old self. And those same thoughts, those same insecurities of I'm being left all alone. I'm lost. I need the guidance. I need that mentorship and I'm not getting what I need. And I feel like I'm drifting and I'm lost. She says, that's the feeling. And so we're able to just go and work with the nervous system in more detail when we have that kind of a story behind it. And that's kind of the beauty of the body work is being able to identify like, okay, like there's stories that can be associated with each of the different feelings. And so it's not just you're experiencing this emotion. No, like there is a part of you that experiences that emotion because it had a certain experience. Now, there are other parts of you that feel something very different. And for example, you know, like everybody has this part of them that feels like that child who is lost and doesn't know what to do next. But everybody also has this part of you that's like, no, like go take charge of the world and go conquer it all. And they're very competing parts. The child part is going to want to stay small, not be seen. It's going to want to, you know, it's going to be afraid of everything, whereas this other part is going to get really frustrated because it wants to go out and do everything. And so we can really start to differentiate, like, when you feel this way, like, this is this part, and they have that emotion for a reason, and what's their story? And then how do we support these other emotions, these other parts of you, and support them, give them the support now that they need in order to be able to go along with the team?
This is so fascinating, because for someone like myself, I battled with mental, you know, health my whole life. And it was interesting recently, in like a deep sort of meditative state, I sort of saw what this part of myself, because what you're saying there is that your frontal lobe is just so logical and just going,
yes,
this stuff makes no sense. Like, why am I experiencing this? Like, but it's in my body somewhere. Right. And then this is like free counseling, so thank you.
I'll send you the bill later.
Just cutting to the point, I remember in a deep meditative state, I saw that part of myself, mm-hmm. whether it was my subconscious trying to show me mm-hmm. something, but I saw that subconscious part of myself that was almost wreaking havoc on my nervous system. And it was this young, immature self. And I saw it and I was like, huh. But I'd never made this connection as to what you're saying, right. like in terms of my nervous system being so immature. And so I'm still even, you know, it just makes so much sense. So I would love to know, if someone's listening to this, and I know people will be listening to this that have struggled with, you know, so much mental health that's so common in our community. If they're going to get started tonight, they're going to start meditating and experiencing this. What's the most safest way they can do that without opening up a can of worms and things getting out of control?
Because that would
be also a factor. So what's the safest way they can start doing it themselves tonight?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So a safe way to start would be to find a safe spot in your body. And there are going to be lots of places in our body that feel unpleasant, uncomfortable for whatever reason, right? Don't start there. Please don't start there, right? Because they're uncomfortable for a reason, and it's because something's there. And unless you're familiar and you know what to do when that comes up and you open that box, just don't open the box right now. What you would start with is, where in your body do you feel some degree of warmth, some degree of relaxation? And what can be helpful is to contrast that with something. So it can be helpful to say, all right, where in your body do you feel some tension? Where in your body do you feel something unpleasant? And they identify that. Okay, great. Don't focus on that. Where in your body do you find a place that's less tight, that's less achy, that's less painful? Even if it's just a little less, that's fine, but just a little less. Let's focus there and just spend 30 seconds, 30 to 60 seconds. That's really all your nervous system needs to be able to shift, and just take that in. Like, focus on what that feels like to feel less pain, less uncomfortable, less unpleasant in those spots. And that would be a safe exercise for anybody to try and not get overwhelmed. Because I would not want them to open up anything that they weren't prepared and had the knowledge and the tools to deal with, because that can be pretty scary too.
I even find what you just suggested there so powerful, particularly something that I'm going to focus on myself, because I think when you're in that state of total, you know, that there's that, I guess you're saying that adolescent/childish nervous system part of yourself, which is totally going haywire, it's so easy to focus on what is happening in your body. So, for example, it's like you're feeling nauseous. Yep. Your brain can't not focus on what is going on. You're just like, oh, I'm feeling sick, or I've got this tightness in my chest, or whatever, however it reveals in you. I think it's a really powerful way to just focus away from it in a constructive way, so it doesn't become overwhelming, and then you can focus on a part of your body that actually feels normal, which is almost like an oasis when you're in those states.
So, thank you so much for that. It's different from meditation per se, because we're not turning the brain off, right? We're not turning the brain off and going into the body. On the contrary, we're actually using our brain to just focus where we want it to focus in the body. Mm-hmm. So, and that's again, just really helpful then to start to establish that connection between the brain and the body, because we're not cutting the brain off. We're not turning it off. We're actually using it, channeling it, harnessing it in order to change where our focus is and decide to focus on something that does feel more pleasurable, more pleasant.
Great. And I'd love to just explore a little on the biological side of things. With your patients and clients, do you, you know, outside of the good general health principles of getting them healthy, because I know our brains just can't function when our bodies are just, you know, riddled with inflammation. But you mentioned mitochondria before. That was super interesting. Could you tell us a little bit how you enhance the mitochondria to function well in these situations?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So whether or not a person has done some functional medicine testing and found that they're deficient in certain nutrients in the mitochondria, because of the amount of energy that the nervous system takes up, I want to just give you everything to help your mitochondria, because I know it's going to help the process, right? Even if you're at a good level, if we can just optimize that, like, let's do that, especially while we're going through this more intense therapeutic process, because the more I can optimize your nervous system, the more capacity for that therapeutic process a person is going to have. They're not going to be as rigid. I'm going to be able to do more with them with the therapy if that's optimized. So I'm going to be wanting to give them all like the ubiquinol and the PQQ, the selenium, like all of these things that are the normal type of supplements to boost mitochondria. I'm going to be starting with those for sure. Mm-hmm. I will also be doing some degree of assessment of their inflammation just to see if that is a contributing factor to their poor mitochondria health and addressing that as well. And by inflammation, that may not necessarily be labs. Sometimes and oftentimes we can just determine that based on their history. Like, have they ever had a concussion? That we're also dealing with some brain inflammation, primed microglia, those kinds of things. And then do they get cycles of inflammation, or do they have joints that hurt? Do they have, you know, the bloating? There's a lot that we can tell from symptoms. And if they have any of those symptoms, then we're going to be hitting the immune system hard too. And then I do some cutting edge stuff to boost the mitochondria. And what I really like to use is NAD. And so I actually have an NAD patch on right now on my leg here, which I will not make you see. But NAD, whether IV NAD, NAD through patches, there's also like a nasal spray NAD that can specifically help the brain. That is something that I'm encouraging a lot of people to use as well, because it's so powerful for helping the mitochondria make more energy. So, and then I use a few peptides. Some of the mitochondrial boosting peptides as well are ones that I've seen a lot of benefit in for people who have that level of dysfunction and imbalance in their mitochondria. So there's the basics that I'm going to put everybody on. And then there's these cutting edge stuff that I will selectively say, we need to go to the next level if you really want to, you know, have the fastest response to the therapy.
Awesome. And so the NAD stuff, would you recommend, is there any kind of safe level that you'd recommend, or is that something that you really would want someone to talk to their doctor about?
With the NAD, the patches are very safe at 400 milligrams. Right now I have an 800 milligram patch on. So I would not recommend someone start with an 800 milligram patch, especially if they have any kind of chronic disease where they've been exposed to mold or Lyme. Those are some of the conditions where, you know what, like, we can actually overwhelm your mitochondria and cause a negative reaction and you'll go more into fatigue. But if a person is doing the IV NAD, also depends on their health. If they have those types of conditions, I would stick to no more than 250 or 500 milligrams IV to see how they do. If they're healthy, robust, and they just want to really optimize, then they can usually start with 750 milligrams IV and be just fine. But especially the IVs are going to need to go through a provider. They don't always have to go through a provider for the patches and the other forms of the NAD.
Great. And could you just remind us again why the mitochondria is so crucial for this trauma picture?
Yes. Yes. So the nervous system is our survival system. And when our nervous system detects any kind of a threat, it goes into a very active, energetically active process to keep us alive. It does survival very well. That is its specialty. And it just takes up a lot of energy. And especially when you have someone who's hypervigilant, who's in that high anxiety state, that is a lot of energy that the nervous system is consuming to maintain that level of alertness and hypervigilance. So knowing that, we know that the mitochondria are the energy powerhouses of the body and of each neuron and nervous system cell. And so when we know that the nervous system has been in a state of chronic stress, we know that by helping it make more energy, having more energy available to it, it will not be feeling that internal stress of, ooh, I don't know if we have enough energy to keep going at this rate. And so that can be one source of the internal message of threat is, I don't know if we have enough energy to maintain this. And so by just helping optimize our mitochondria, its ability to make energy efficiently, then we can just be, again, providing it the environment in which it feels like it has all the resources and nutrients that it needs to do its job well.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much for everything you've shared. I know it's going to be a huge breakthrough moment for a lot of people watching this, that maybe it's that, you know, uncovered thing that they've just not looked at. I think for one, it's something that's so empowering to give the power back to people, to be able to take their health into their own hands and to not be dependent. Not that obviously counseling is
Its place.
Yeah, it has its place. We love it. But, you know, to feel that people can just get that power back, I think that's probably one of the most biggest things we see. And then I've experienced, our community experience, is that sense of helplessness. And I think you've given a lot of people hope today that they can, you know, find a way forward. And that this could be the missing piece of their health puzzle. So thank you so much for sharing everything you've done.
Absolutely.
It's such an amazing work. What is the best way people can get in contact with you and, learn more, learning, go down deeper into this stuff?
Sure. So my website is traumahealingaccelerated.com. And so that's where they can go. They can find more videos that I've done with more information, more details. They can find the programs that I've developed. I have an online course on Shift to Calm Aliveness. And so that's the basic starting course that a person would come in to actually learn how to do this. I walk them through this process of doing this in a safe way that's containing things. And then I have the two advanced courses in the parts work and then somatic experiencing specifically for attachment and relationship disruptions and trauma. So that's where they can find, more content, more resources, more information, and then the programs if they're actually ready to try a little bit of this.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Amy.
Thank you so much.